Welcome, everyone. Glad you're here this morning. A little bit of a full house. People in the balcony, glad you're here, too. Yes. My name is Jeff, and I'm one of the pastors here. Happy you're here. A number of years ago, I went on a big backcountry high alpine sledding trip with my son and a few buddies. And first time we'd ever done something like that. So excited to get back up, way up into the mountains, like the high alpine on these sleds. And if you've ever seen these things, like they are crazy. Big long tracks behind them. They got a wide, floatable skis on the front. But the power that these things have, they can take you from zero to like 70 mile an hour. It's so fast. Big tracks, big paddles on those tracks, just rip you through that snow. We were so excited. We got up into the backcountry and all you could see was just acres and acres, thousands of acres of untracked powder. And we were so pumped to just get out there and just, I couldn't wait. We loaded up. We had the beacons for the avalanche. We did all the testing of the training that went through that. We got out there and I had no idea how tricky it is to do this. And for anyone that's ever done this, you'll know when you're sitting on beds of powder that literally if you jump off your sled, you could just right up to here. But those things, one blip of that throttle in the wrong way, and those sleds will just go, yeah, like this, like where you're literally swimming. And so we'd be out there, six of us guys on our sleds, and our guide was like literally going around from one of us to the next. He's going, just wait, help. And he'd come over and I don't know, it's like he was walking on water on his sled. He'd come over, no problem, jump out and help us tip up our sled, get it all loosened up. And he'd say, okay, you ready? You ready? Okay, yeah, I'm good. Then he'd go off to the next guy and get him unstuck. Meanwhile, we'd go out. We spent more time over that weekend trying to dig ourselves out than we did riding the beautiful untouched powder. Just the workout of all workouts. Without a guide, we would have been screwed. I'll tell you that right now. That reminds me a lot of the spiritual journey. A lot. The spiritual journey with all the promise of life transformation, the promise of peace and significance, the moments when you get free of the entanglements of perhaps insecurities or stuff from your past, when you can kind of climb up, when you can climb on a trip and head down to Mexico and give back, or when you can give back to your neighbor, when you experience the joy and the thrill, the sense of purpose of being able to give your life to something that's bigger than you. The thrill of being able to do that. As much as it is so exciting, the opportunity, the potential of doing that, much of the spiritual journey is spent digging ourselves out of the holes we make. The spiritual journey is tricky. How many know what I'm talking about? It is easy to spend a lot of time with our own choices, our own ways of being, where we're just kind of hammering on the throttle and sinking that thing axle deep. And spending the week spun out with attitudes and behaviors that aren't necessarily changing and transforming the world, aren't lifting us up to this beautiful place. Rather, we can find ourselves in this negative frame of mind. We can walk out these doors with the best intentions and get distracted, get disoriented, frustrated, embittered. That's why the need for guides on the spiritual journey is massive. Someone who can see what's going on. Someone who can navigate over and go, you look a little stuck here. You okay? Oh yeah, no, I'm fine. No. Don't think you are. In fact, that's the real glaring difference between the spiritual journey and backsliding up in the high alpine. Is sometimes on the spiritual journey, you can be stuck, you can be buried to the axles and not know it. And sometimes it takes another set of eyes, someone outside your story, someone maybe with a little information, sometimes just someone who's been there, done it, and can spot it, can smell it, can sense it when things aren't going well, and they go, hey, can we chat? That's what I want to talk about this morning, is the importance of guides. Over the last few weeks, we've been unpacking and explaining the high aerial view of the Friends Church approach. We've met a lot of new people over the last little while. Some people are coming in and going, you know, I haven't been in church in a long, long time. And I'm just trying to figure out what you guys are about. Because you don't feel like the church I went to when I went as a kid. There's something different here. And so we thought it would be great if we could just kind of from 50,000 feet explain how we do what we do, how we look at different things. If you've been coming, you'll know week one, we just started with talking about what is spirituality? Why are you even here? Why did you get out of bed to show up on a Sunday morning here? What is it you're looking for? Chances are there are these moments you've experienced where you sense something deeper, something more going on in your life or around you. Some light turned on and you went, wait a second. Life is about more than just this or that. And you started on a search to find it. Second week, we talked about religion. Vince talked about the scaffolding. Religion, not a bad thing. It's a man-made scaffolding to help us, give us handles to be able to explain, to wrap our heads around perhaps the more than in this world. But it was never designed to be God. Religion was never designed to be the point. It was only a marker to point us in the direction of the more, to help us get there. And at any point, it stops working. We cash it out. We change it up. We find something because the religion, the scaffold, isn't the point. What is being created, what is being experienced is. Third week, last week, Vince talked about the Bible. The Bible being not a science textbook, not designed to be in perfection, explain how the world in all its complexity works. But it is a collection of man's spiritual wisdom, and that's how we view it here. That's how we interact with it. Today I want to talk about Jesus, the man, who I think was one of the ultimate guides on earth. Despite all the black eyes that the Christian religion has suffered over the ages, due to the missteps of its own followers, the figure of Jesus still remains one of the most well-respected and influential religious icons in the world today. Say you what you want about Christianity, about organized church. You say Jesus, and there is something that even the most hardened skeptic will admit, you know what? I got less of a problem with him or what I know of him. Why is that? What is it about Jesus or how he operated that left and continues to leave such a mark on our world? I know that if I was in different churches asking that question, I would get a number of different answers. This morning, I want to talk about Jesus as guide, because he was unbelievable. This guy had a way of getting people unstuck. He ran into this Samaritan woman one day at a well. Just the fact that he was a Jew talking to a Samaritan woman would have completely stunned her. Samaritans were considered second-class society, according to the Jews. Jews never even gave them the time of day. And there was Jesus, a Jewish rabbi, engaging in a conversation with this woman as she was drawing well. I'm sure she didn't know what to do with that. Not only did he engage her in a conversation, he took a lot of interest in her life. In fact, over the course of the conversation, he began to uncover things for her. A trail of broken relationships. At some point, he uncovers a deep longing inside of her that her relationships just aren't filling. And he says, we can fix that. I don't know how long their conversation was, but that woman that day left flying on cloud nine. She left that place, it would appear by the story, with new hope that she hadn't felt in a long time. Vince mentioned last week the challenging conversation that Jesus had with that young rich guy, where he pointed out the young kid's attachment to money as being the problem for him. The young rich guy comes in and he's looking for tips, for pointers from Jesus, the man. He's going, man, I'm following all these rules. Jesus kind of puts his thumb right on a pressure point and says, how about this right here? How about you go and sell all you own and give it to the poor? That was not what that guy was expecting. In fact, he left disturbed. He was like, thanks anyways, Jesus. I don't need it that bad. Whether the input was welcome or not, the effect that Jesus' words and actions had on people seemed to unearth often the root of the problem. Whether they wanted to hear it or not, he had a precision, a surgical ability to just kind of point right to the root right there. Go, is this it? Highlighting things that got twisted up in people and they couldn't even see it. Where they'd missed the point. Jesus walked into the midst of a bloodthirsty religious mob one day who were ready. They were holding big rocks ready to stone a woman they'd caught in adultery. And all he said was, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. The crowd goes silent, and then all you could hear was the sound of the rocks dropping, hitting the ground. He could put his finger on the problem. He could say, you're missing the point. He had a way of turning people's self-righteous judgment on a dime, turning it on themselves. People who thought that they had it all under control, in a few sentences, they would be rocked back onto their heels. Now unsure of everything they were so certain about only seconds before. We don't know all that he talked about with Zacchaeus, the tax collector, the hated little short guy who's up in the tree listening as Jesus was talking one day. Jesus invites him to lunch, says, you and me, we're going to chat. And over the course of that conversation, something happened. We don't know all that he said. But at some point in that lunchtime, dinner, whatever it was, Zacchaeus is recorded as saying, I've done some bad things. But I'm going to make them right. I've ripped off some people. I'll admit it. But I'm going to go and pay them back. I can see Jesus going, awesome. The guy had an unbelievable ability to step into someone's life. And sometimes in the most disarming ways, sometimes very confrontational, he had a way of just going, I think you're stuck a bit. Or I think you missed the point. Or I think, hey, how about we try something else? And people would walk away going, what was I thinking? Call it a punch in the gut. Call it a warm embrace that you give them. A high five, perhaps, sometimes. A table flipping freak out. They did in the temple one day. Sometimes it was just seemed like a little gentle nudge. You could always tell when Jesus had done his thing, because people always seem to walk away a little less stuck than when he first walked in. I've often thought it's sad that so few got to experience what Jesus could do. I mean, you think about the generations and generations of people that came long before Jesus ever walked the planet. And then I think about the generations and generations, the thousands of years since, like you and me, who never got to be the one who he stared down and said, hey, come here, pal, come here. It's Chad. I think it would have been difficult, but I would have loved to have the certainty of Jesus sitting down and saying, Jeff, geez, you know, you keep talking about that on Sunday, but buddy, come here. I'm seeing you Monday. Can we talk? And as difficult as it might have been, I would have loved to have the guide, Jesus, consulting. Just that level of knowing. Okay, yeah. I'd like to hope that I would have been the one that would have said, okay, oh yeah. No, it's okay. I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, all right, I got it now. I would have loved the certainty of just having him coaching me. Am I alone on this? Wouldn't that? And I just get the sense from him that he was just like that big brother that came along people. As long as you're open, hey. I guess my question this morning really is, though, were those disciples, were the people that were in circulation around Jesus for that little window of time, that 34 years or so that he was on the planet, were they the only ones who got the benefit of Jesus the guide? Were they really the only ones? If you go back in the Hebrew scriptures, long before Jesus ever showed up, it seems there were other people who were pulling at Jesus. Sometimes they're the most unsuspecting people. I'm reminded of a conversation that a guy named Nathan had with King David. You read about it in the Bible. David, this powerful man, he was the king of Israel. He fell for a beautiful woman named Bathsheba. She was married. Not to David. But he fell for her. And why not? I mean, he's king. He can do what he wants, right? That's what he thought. He uses his power and his authority to make her his own. He has sex with her. And then he has her husband killed to cover his tracks. He's made off with the gold. But one day a guy named Nathan shows up at his door. Very unassuming. Begins to have a conversation with David. And in a very creative and yet like a disarming way, Nathan leans over and says, I know. I can just imagine the stunned look on David's face. At first, I bet he was probably wanting to just deny it. And Nathan was taking a risk. I don't know if it was just heavy intuition. I don't know if Nathan just had kind of this divine spidey sense that something was going on. What led him to that place where he would challenge, confront the king of Israel? But after that conversation was done, David is a mess. The king of Israel is broken, fessing up, and wanting to make it right. The Bible suggests that Nathan wasn't some superpower. He was an average Joe, somehow who played the role of a divine catalyst, a guide, to snap David from heading off on the North 40. He's going, whoa, 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 what are you doing? Let me jump into our world today. And let me ask you something. Have you ever had someone stick their nose in your business? Someone who is concerned about you? Think about that for a second. Have you ever had someone call you out? Something you were doing, something you had done, something you were just wanting to pretend didn't exist? Ever had someone get in your grill and going, what are you thinking? Why would you talk to that person that way? Do you think you can get away with this? Uh-uh. Spouse? Your own child? Friend? A sibling? Maybe it was an employer. Maybe it was a coworker. Perhaps in the moment, you got fired up. You got pissed off. You look at them and said, mind your own business. I know I have. There have been many times I got so defensive in moments like this, and I pushed back and said, who are you to be talking to me? Oh, Miss Perfect. Oh, you think you got your act together so much? I said all kinds of things to push them back, to make them shut up. But I know after it's all said and done, when I'm alone, oh, there was something to what they were saying. It got in my kitchen. You ever had that happen? Again, long before Jesus came, there's a guy. We read about an Egyptian pharaoh troubled by a dream back in early ancient history. Dreams were a big thing, especially in Egyptian culture. You got a dream, something the divine was speaking. The question was, what were they trying to say? The Egyptian has this dream. He starts looking around saying, someone tell me what this means. I think there's something behind this, something important. His staff, they're all looking for someone who can interpret the dream. They bring a young kid caught up in the Egyptian prison system. Young kid named Joseph. Apparently he knows how to do this thing. Joseph sits down with him and says, I'll tell you what that thing means. And after it's all said and done, as Joseph finishes talking, the Egyptian pharaoh is locked in. There is something about what he's saying that's resonating. He's going, I think you know something. This young Israelite who had been held in captivity in Egyptian culture comes in and starts speaking words of just uncanny wisdom. Those words, the guidance that he offered through the interpretation of that dream, guided Egypt through one of the worst famines over a 7-year period they'd ever experienced. I don't know that that happens very often in my life these days. I don't have people speaking to me, interpreting my dreams. But I'll tell you this, I have had people share insight, share a story. You know what's weird? Is sometimes they're telling their story and they don't even know it, but it is ringing my bell. Have you ever had that happen? Someone without them even saying anything, they start talking and you're just like, oh no, that's me right there? Or have you ever picked up a book? Or listened to someone on some podcast and they start talking and it's just like all of a sudden everything going on around you fades into the background. And what they're saying, you go, oh, that's for me right there. Ever had that? I had that happen. A number of years ago, I was introduced to a guy, spiritual mystic, author named Eckhart Tolle. I've talked about him in the past here. At the time, years and years ago, you didn't bring up Eckhart Tolle in many Christian circles because he wasn't a professing Christian. What could he know? That was the thing. In fact, if you told anyone that you're reading Eckhart Tolle, especially in pastoral circles in the Christian world, they'd be like, whoa, you've gone like rogue. And they really thought I was strange when I told them. I saw him talking to Oprah on TV. And they're like, oh, geez, Jeff, you're in trouble. But I did. And it was in a trailer. He said something and it piqued my interest. And I went, who is this guy? So then I tuned in a little bit more. And things that he was saying were, I missed the show, but I just caught a little bit. And we didn't have PVRs back then. So I couldn't go back and watch it. But I went and found this book. It's called A New Earth. I started reading it. I remember in the morning sitting there, and my whole family, it's my favorite time to read because none of them are up yet and I'm reading. And it's like, I couldn't read a page without all of a sudden, it's like I'm being transported like a fly on the wall looking down over my life. He would share a concept and then all of a sudden I'd see it in my life. It was like I'm looking at the way that I'm snapping at Kathy and the kids and he's explaining the process. What might be happening? I'm going, oh yeah, I do that. I began to see the way that I would try to impress people, to be something I wasn't, to project myself in a better light. The awareness was I'd just be sitting there, I'd be going, oh my God. I'd have these moments and I'd just sit back and go, yeah, I'm doing that. I'm doing that. It's like he'd shine a light. On parts of my life, I highlighting how I'd tell these half-truths to people to impress them. I still do occasionally. He'd say, you see that? You're scared of what they think, so you won't tell them the truth. I could go on. The awareness that I was having, like literally within one page. And I found after an hour of reading, and just like in this moment, I'd walk away. He had a 5,000 watt spotlight shining down into parts of my life. And I'm just looking at them. And it's like patterns that have been in my life for so long that I had not seen. And I would be so amazed. I'm going, this is coming from a guy who's not even a Christian. Whole nother story. Have you ever had someone do that to you? I talk to people who right now are reading Brené Brown, and you are learning stuff about your life, learning about your way of being in your world that might be a little bit broken. I see the epiphanies happening. People talking to me about the different authors, different podcasts that they're downloading, the stuff that they're growing from. And it's just like there are guides out there that seem to be shining lights and they're just mind bombs. Life changing. Let's go back one more time. The story of Peter, one of Jesus' disciples. Now this is after Jesus. Jesus has been killed. Now his followers are trying to keep the thing going. And Peter has this vision, becomes convinced of changes that need to be made within the religious community. And they're big. His vision is that those people who are not Jewish should be included in the movement. And that might not seem like a big deal to us, because we're not Jewish, and we're kind of, but they were all Jewish at this point. Anyone who wasn't Jewish wasn't allowed into the meetings at this point. It's Jesus' followers. We would not have been allowed coming in going, hey, what's going on? No, no. Peter says, no, there's a change going on here. He has this vision, and all of a sudden he's going, guys, we got to let these people in. There's Gentiles, non-Jewish people out there who are interested in connecting with Yahweh, with the divine, the spiritual journey, what Jesus had talked about. We need to let them in. Created this huge conflict. But he was not deterred. He's going, no. We're doing this. We're making these changes. Those changes changed the landscape of the entire Christian movement. Massive. Let me ask you something. Have you ever known someone who in the middle of their lives began to pick up a torch and be able to carry it and began to push for some cause, to defend someone who has been dealt with unjustly? Have you ever met people that stood up and said, okay, whoa, this here, this behavior now, the way that we're treating women, the way that we're treating the LGBTQ community, no, that's not happening anymore. No, not on my watch it isn't. You watch your language, pal. No. Hey, I watched how you dealt with that person, and you know what? I'm not letting you get away with that. You're coming back. Have you never known people that have stepped up and played that kind of role? That was like a Peter. It's like a Jesus. I know people in this community who are exactly that. We are embracing causes right now as a community because some of you have stepped up and said, I am not going to have blood on my hands with this. Is there anyone else who's with me? And we watch as other people stand up. This is a form of Jesus. If you look back throughout human history, you can see these catalytic moments of transformation and change that have been created, not just by Jesus, but by people, normal people, who have seemed to tie into the way of Jesus. People who, whether they knew it or not, seemed to operate with the same skill sets as what he operated with. Here's the problem. So often we don't appreciate the help they're offering. We don't appreciate the thing they're doing that was exactly the same kind of thing that Jesus was doing. They are Jesus in our world. This is a bit of a mind bender because within the Christian community, especially, we have elevated Jesus to this place as a guide that seems no one could ever replicate. And so unless it's the words of Jesus off a page, unless you are quoting him from the Bible, the amount of credence, the amount of influence that we've given people in our world, listen to me, even people outside the Jesus tradition is very small. Now I speak from within the Christian community especially. And I think that's a tragedy. Because all throughout human history, people have been used by God as powerful guides for others. And something tells me you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you think carefully, you have benefited from the actions, the words, the wisdom, the prodding, the confrontation of someone, and you may not have even known it, but they were acting like Jesus to you. Maybe without you even knowing it, you have acted as a guide for someone else. take a moment right now to think about the people that could fall into this category for you. I want you to think about the friends. I want you to think hard about the authors, the recovery group mentors, bloggers, podcasters, family members. My mother-in-law, who, if I can say this with all due respect, has on many occasions driven me nuts. But there have been a couple moments I can look back at. She caught me in her crosshairs. And she said some things to me at the time that you hurt so deep. But her heart was in the right place. And the reason they hurt so bad is it was true. And she called me out. And my response was sad. It was embarrassing. But I look back now, and my mother-in-law was the voice of Jesus to me. She's been this Jedi guide that I have not recognized. And here she is on the tail end of her life. And I look back at the number of moments that she's spoken, and I've missed it. Think hard about the people in your life. Because it's sad that many times we are stuck. We're wallowing. We're caught in patterns in life. And you know what? Sometimes these people can see it. And we can't. I'm done. Question is, are you open? Are you open to the voices of the guides around you? Could you be stuck right now and not even know it? Could you be laboring right now in your life, distracted, disoriented, chasing the wrong things, caught up, focusing on the minors and not the majors, screwing yourself over and your potential? You're a net negative in terms of what you're bringing in life. And perhaps there's a voice that's been calling out, and you've disregarded it. You say, yeah, no, that ain't Jesus. I'm telling you, I think Jesus is alive and well in the guides around us. Questions, are we listening? Before Jesus was getting ready to go, he looked at his disciples and he says, look it, I'm going. And they were panicking because he's saying, look it, my time on earth is short. I'm going to leave you, but you're going to be okay. And they start freaking out. He's going, no. He says, you're supposed to be asking me questions. We're gonna work this out. But instead, all you're doing is you're freaking out. He said, trust me, it is to your benefit that I go. Because if I go, I will be able to send you a helper who will come and be with you. If I don't go, the helper don't come. This is an interesting passage in John. He goes on to say, look at this helper who I'm sending you. Now, in other translations, sometimes it's a friend. People have used and called it in certain Christian traditions, the Holy Spirit, the guide, God's Spirit. He said, this Spirit will come and it will guide you to truth. It will make sense of all that's going on in your life. This sounds like I'm kind of going back into my former, more Pentecostal tradition that I was raised in, but I'm telling you this, I believe it. This has been my experience. I believe God's Spirit resides within me. And it has this ability, he has this ability, she has this ability to tip me off when someone's speaking and I should be listening if I'm open. It's this nudge, this internal, whoa, pay attention. It's like spidey senses going off. And if you've ever felt it, you know what I'm talking about. It's like, of all the voices, of all the books that we're reading, of all the different noise that's going around, it has this ability to say, right there, pay attention to what that person is saying right there. It's for you. I think the Spirit of the Divine resides within you and can point it out when it's happening. Make pay attention if you're open to it. You just have to be open. Would you this week, would you be paying attention, following the little nudges, the gut checks, the intuition, whatever you want to call it, those moments when you know something's going on, or maybe you're looking for an answer, maybe you're struggling with something, maybe right now you're stuck and you don't realize that, and you just need to be in this moment where you just go, where am I right now? I think the divine has a way of bringing the guide along that can speak. That's my prayer for you. May we be open this week to hear. We may not have been one of Jesus' private clients. We've got it. We've got it now today, if you're paying attention. May you be open. Jesus would say, let him who has ears to hear, let him hear. That's my prayer for you this week. All right, I'm done.